Quinn felt a red-hot needle jab up his spine, pressing in hard. He yelped more with shock than pain, his back convulsing frantically, pushing him out of the pod. The laughing crewman grabbed him before he hit the mesh bulkhead 3 meters in front of the pod. It wasn't the same man that had put Quinn into the pod seconds before, days before, weeks. God's brother, Quinn thought, how long has it been? He gripped the mesh with sweaty fingers, pressing his forehead against the cool metal. They were still in freefall, his stomach oscillating like jelly. "You going to put up a fight, Ivet?" the crewman asked. Quinn shook his head weakly. "No." His arms were trembling at the memory of the pain. God's brother, but it had hurt. He was frightened. The neutral blitz had damaged his implants. That would have made the final irony, to have got this far only for them to be broken. The 2 nanonic clusters the sect had given him were the best, high quality and very expensive. Both of them had passed undetected in the standard body scan the police had given him back on Earth. They had too, possessing the bioelectric pattern-mimic cluster would have qualified him for immediate passage to a penal planet. Being entrusted with it was another token of the sect's faith in him, in his abilities. Copying someone's bioelectric pattern so he could use their credit disk inevitably meant having to dispose of them afterwards. Weaker members might shirk from the task, not Quinn. He'd used it on over 17 victims in the last 5 months. A quick status check revealed both the nanonic clusters were still functional. God's brother hadn't deserted him, not entirely. "Smart boy. Come on, then." The crewman grabbed Quinn's shoulder and began to swim along the mesh with nonchalant flips of his free hand. Most of the pods they passed were empty. Quinn could see the outlines of more pods on the other side of the mesh. The light was dim, casting long grey shadows. Looking round him, he knew how a fly must feel crawling about inside an air-conditioning duct. After the life-support module, there were a couple of long, tubular corridors. Crewmen and colonists floated past. One family was clustered around a wailing 4-year-old girl who clung to a grab hoop with a death grip. Nothing her parents could say would make her let go. They went through an airlock into a long cylindrical compartment with several hundred seats, nearly all of them occupied. Space plane, Quinn realized. He had left Earth on the Brazilian orbital tower, a 10-hour journey crammed into a life capsule with 25 other involuntary transportees. It suddenly struck him he didn't even know where he was now. Nothing had been said about his destination during his 52nd hearing in front of the magistrates. "Where are we?" he asked the crewman. "What planet?" The crewman gave him a funny look. "Lalonde. Why, didn't they tell you?"
"No."
"Oh, well, you could have copped a worse one, believe me. Lalonde is Euro-Christian ethnic, opened up about 30 years ago. I think there's a Tarathka settlement, but it's mainly humans. You'll do all right, but take my advice. Don't get the Ivet supervisor pissed at you."
"Right."
He was afraid to ask what a Tarathka was. Some kind of Xenoc, presumably. He shuddered at that. He, who had never ventured out of the arcologies or vac train stations back on Earth, now they were expecting him to live under open skies with talking animals. God's brother! The crewman hauled Quinn down to the rear of the space plane, then took his collar off and told him to find a spare seat. There was a group of about 20 people sitting in the last section, most of them lads barely out of their teens, all with the same slate-grey one-piece jumpsuit he'd been issued with. IVT was printed in bright scarlet letters on their sleeves. Waster kids. Quinn could recognize them. It was like looking into a mirror which reflected the past. Him a year ago, before he joined the Light Brothers, before his life meant something. Quinn approached them, fingers arranged casually in the inverted cross sign. Nobody responded. Oh, well. He strapped himself in next to a man with a pale face and short-cropped ginger hair. "Jackson Gale," his neighbor said. Quinn nodded numbly and muttered his own name. Jackson Gale looked about 19 or 20, with a kind of lean body and contemptuous air that marked him down as a street soldier, tough and uncomplicated. Quinn wondered idly what he had done to be transported. The PA came on, and the pilot announced they would be undocking in 3 minutes. A chorus of whoops and cheers came from the colonists in the front seats. Someone started playing a mini-synth, the jolly tune grating on Quinn's nerves.